Sheriff Chris Nano says that they are getting closer, whatever that means, I guess, to a suspect in Nancy Guthrie's disappearance back on February 1st. Meanwhile, the Pima County Sheriff's Department and Tucson Police are looking for a female kidnapping suspect with a long rap sheet who apparently did this kidnapping not far from where Nancy Guthrie is. So what is going on? YouTubers are also getting arrested. A memorial has been removed. And 4 months later, the question remains, where is Nancy Guthrie?
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. A live show Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Fridays, it's with the one and only, the oldest active true crime podcaster in America. That is my mother, Carm, a child Holocaust survivor, hence Surviving the Survivor, and a licensed therapist. On your way in, please hit that like and subscribe button. And we've got an active Patreon page as well. The biggest headline involving Nancy Guthrie, and we have not been on this story for some time, is the Pima County Sheriff's Department, which one of our guests formerly worked for, who you're going to meet in a second. They've issued a BOLO, a be on the lookout for a kidnapping suspect, a suspect in a kidnapping, wanted in a separate abduction case. It's less than 7 miles away from Nancy's home. And this woman has apparently a history of kidnapping and a long rap sheet. Authorities right now are stressing, well, there's no current known connection between Nancy Guthrie and the woman whose name is Coral Michelle Smith. I like that name, Coral, and Nancy's disappearance. But naturally, investigators and people's curiosity has been piqued. And then at the same time, as I mentioned, some citizen salutes and YouTubers being thrown out of the neighborhood. What's going on? What happened to the First Amendment? We're going to look at that. And of course, notably, Savannah Guthrie just left another message regarding her mother. Of course, Savannah, the beloved host of the Today Show. Now, best guests here. Let me start to bring them in. You've got Kurt Dabb, who is a retired homicide detective with Pima County. There he is, a real life homicide detective. And here's another one. This guy's from Las Vegas, Nevada, the godfather of true crime, Phil Ramos, a 3-time officer of the year. And our third guest, who hopefully we will get on, is Bernard Zaper, a retired special agent with the ATF, a very bright mind. He's having a little trouble logging on, but the COE will help there. And she will also help roll this little note from Surviving Survivor. Of all the things that stress me out, and trust me, there is a very long list outside of health, money has got to be number one. I mean, Carm always says to me, Joel, if it's a money problem, it is not a real problem, but I call BS. Without money, what can you buy? And I'll tell you what, things are getting worse, not better. You've got nagging inflation and the cost of living through the roof. So buying eggs, putting bread on the table is next to impossible. And that is why I'm so glad I found American Financing. They have salary-based mortgage consultants who understand that in 2026, you've got to have a better strategy than just piling up debt on your credit cards. American Financing consultants can help you save an average of $800 a month. They understand that you can use the equity in the home that you work so very hard to get. And listen, there are no upfront fees, no pressure. And if you start today, you could delay 2 mortgage payments. So call American Financing today, 866-890-9489. That's 866-890-9489. Or go to AmericanFinancing.net/surviving. Look at this. So there you ducked down out of the way. Phil Ramos is back right now. Kurt Dabb, let me actually, I usually start with the godfather, but this is your hometown here. February 1st, she goes missing. That is Nancy Guthrie, the mother of Savannah Guthrie. It is now June 9th. It happens February 1st, June 9th, today's date. You ever think that we'd be sitting here yet another panel with you and the great Phil Ramos And it hurts because I can see Bernard Zaper trying to log in backstage and he's having trouble. The COE will help get him in there. And the COE, I know, also has some, I believe, sound from Nancy Guthrie that I hope we will have. But, Kurt, did you ever think all this time later, 4+ months, we'd be sitting here talking, wondering who this person was that did this horrible thing or people to Nancy Guthrie?
To be frank with you, I was expecting that we'd be a little bit further along. I know at least one of the detectives that's was assigned to the task force, the federal task force. He is probably the best homicide detective I ever worked with in my 7 years in homicide with the Sheriff's Department. He's a very bright guy. He's a digger, man. He just digs and digs and digs. And it's just confusing to me that they, from what we know, they don't have anything. So yeah, it's a shock. I thought we'd be further along in the investigation. Listening to me say we, like I work for them, you know, I don't work there anymore, but you know, it's still my home. So yeah, it's disheartening for investigators, but you know, I can't even imagine, you know, how disheartening it is for the family.
And what's like the, you know, I know you talk to colleagues who either worked there or formerly worked there, and Bob Krieger was going to come on tonight. He had something to do, but he has a nice message in the chat. Look at this. I may have a crush on Phil Ramos from Race and Rodeo. But I mean, what's like the scuttlebutt around town? I mean, among law enforcement, are you guys all just kind of shaking your head going, wow, I can't believe this is happening, that we can't find this person?
Yeah, every cop that I speak to, whether it's from the Sheriff's Department or, you know, another local agency or even the feds, yeah, they're out of the loop, man. It's extremely tight-lipped. Only those who need to know, know. And, you know, unfortunately, everybody has, you know, had to move up, back on to doing, you know, their regular cases.
Yeah. Phil, to you, I mean, you did it better than just about anyone. 36 years, I think, in total. Correct me if I'm wrong, but 15 on homicide or in homicide at the Las Vegas Metropolitan PD, where every once in a while stuff happens. But what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I mean, you just heard Kurt say this guy that he knows one of the best and that he's a, you know, he's a digger. He just digs and digs and digs. I don't know that I've ever asked you this. What makes a great homicide detective? What differentiates the great from the good?
Being relentless, never giving up. You just stick with it and you just keep going and going and going. And then when you think you're all done, you can't go any farther, you find a way to keep going farther. You just never give up because you don't know when that phone call's coming in. You don't know when that car stop's going to occur. You don't know. You just can't look into the future to see. And, you know, I know my buddy Kurt has been through stuff like that. I've been through many cases like that. And this is going to be one, whoever the guys are that are on this one, this is going to be with them forever, long after they retire. So it's one of those career cases that you're never going to forget. I think, you know, like Kurt, I can't believe we're at this point 4 months later and we're no closer than when we saw the boogeyman at on the video at the front door. So it's discouraging, but it gives you a reason to keep plugging away because now these guys are taking it personal.
That's a good point. And I guess they should be at this point. Yeah. Rebecca here, glad to support the best guests. And then AR Wyoming, one of the more generous in all of SDS Nation. Huge thanks to AR for gifting 10 Surviving the Survivor memberships. I mean, Phil, I don't know that I've asked you this either. I know you've talked about some of your high-profile cases, but all these, you know, years later and all your years in the department in Las Vegas, is there like a singular case that you still, like you'll be working on your motorcycle and you're still thinking about that case going, man, what happened here? What could I have done different there?
Yeah. There's a couple like that. More than a couple, you know. When my wife and I are driving around, I'll say, we had a murder right there. And we had a murder over here. And you flood back and you think, God dang it. What did I miss on that one? And you know, you got the handful of closed ones. In fact, we got finally, after 30 years, one of the very first guys we put on death row is supposed to meet his fate this year. So I've been gone for so long, and this guy's still around. But
wow,
there's plenty of cases like that that don't don't go away.
The death row person, what are they convicted of?
Murder, first degree murder. He bludgeoned a retired doctor. He was the very first murder that we had in Sun City here in Vegas. Beat him to death with a hammer. Mm. And he got death penalty. Took the jury like 2 hours to give him the death penalty. And he's been appealing this since 1996.
Any plans to go to the final punishment there?
I don't know. I was thinking about that. I don't know. I might. Huh. Either myself or my partner, Jimmy V, we're talking about it. They may not even invite us to go, but yeah. Maybe.
That's heavy stuff. Bernard Zaper here coming in. Bernard, can you hear me okay?
I hear you great.
Awesome. Welcome back. Loved having you the last couple of times. As you can see, Bernard is a ATF special agent in charge, retired. Bernard, we were just kind of going down memory lane, but obviously with regards to Nancy Guthrie, February 1st was the day she goes missing from the earth, as far as anyone knows. No one has seen her since. Today is June 9th. Did you ever think we would be here on June 9th discussing this?
Yes, for the possibility that, you know, if there was one person involved, if it was a singular activity and it wasn't somebody that was panicking about whatever happened and didn't start to leak or get sloppy, it was possible for that. I thought actually with the resources, probably the week into the first part of the event, that they would get something that would really crack and get momentum. And so it's very unfortunate that we are here talking about it, but that possibility is in the background again, just if it was very minimized to one person.
I'm sorry. What I was going to say is, and I think you've been on before, Phil Ramos, bottom right, is a retired Las Vegas Metropolitan PD homicide. And then you've got Kurt with the cool goatee, who's retired Pima County homicide. And Kurt has been talking to law enforcement friends in Tucson, and it seems, look, we don't know because the FBI is handling a big part of this too, and they don't talk, but the scuttlebutt is basically they've got nothing. Does that surprise you that there's nothing on the radar apparently?
No. And again, the fact that they have nothing, I mean, and I don't want to speculate on this thing. I've avoided that because there's every possibility in the world here, including something that is, I mean, not even gamed out as a possibility, but I mean, and I would hate to say sense, but it just seems like this was a, you know, when crooks get a shitty idea and then it starts to germinate, right? They get an idea of what the outcome will be and they come up with this half-cocked plan, how they think things are going to go. They don't go that way, i.e. it results in her death and the attempted abduction, if there was actually abduction. Then they have to rapidly resolve that. And if it's a singular person and they got her out of the house and then they concealed the body and this person is not doing anything out of the ordinary where the people around him or her or them make any connection between something unusual that they're doing and this crime event, it's possible. It's the most horrible outcome for the family because it's unknowing. So they might have been really sloppy but diligent in their concealment of the body if she's deceased. And so, it's very possible it's cold, because the other thing is, I mean, how hard can they keep the throttle down? You've got a sheriff's department that has lots of public safety responsibility 24 hours a day. There's only so much resource they can put on this at that level. And the same with the FBI. And so, you know, if they're exploiting everything they can think of and nothing is coming of it, it gets to be difficult. I would really like to have an opportunity to ingest the case into East Sleuth, because I am confident that something would come about that just there wasn't a connection made, just because it does that at the speed of light in ways that we can't do it as humans, even a very seasoned professional in this area.
And Bernard, for those of us like myself who are not familiar with eSleuth, explain what is this? What do you do with it?
So eSleuth AI is an investigative AI. It's non-generative, so there's no risk. It doesn't think for itself. But basically, it was built as if you wanted to build the like absolute superstar, supernatural detective who's also a crime analyst, a pathologist, a prosecutor, a defense attorney, all wrapped into one. That's how the brain for this was built. And so what happens is eSleuth, which I'm part of, for disclosure, we go in and we contract with, say, a police agency, and we ingest their record management system and their Axon body cameras and their, you know, that might be, for example, there's a large police agency on the West Coast, shockingly, that has, they have a warehouse full of homicide cases that are paper, and a lot of those have been digitized into drives and whatnot, but the all that stuff is ingested, and so it instantly organizes the cases in a way that, you know, you couldn't do. And what we found is, for example, if you had somebody that's newly assigned to homicide, they might be replacing somebody who retired, and they may like overnight get assigned 35 cases, you know, lower stuff or whatever, but they don't know where the hell to start with that. But after this ingestion, it literally organizes every single investigation and gives it a probability matrix of solution. So what are you going to do? You're going to go right to the ones that are like at 85 or 90%, and it's going to give them a to-do list of things to do immediately, which is unbelievable. I mean, in terms of like managing investigative groups or whatever, this is just awesome, because there you know, you've got your detective that's got 19 years of experience, five serious homicide years of experience, and you have somebody that just rolled out of their first, maybe they did some kind of vice or jump out unit. Now they're stuck doing major crimes as an investigator. They just don't have the acumen yet. This kind of nullifies that, because it can hand walk somebody through really what to do next. And their skill is going to become greater just because they have somebody that's showing them this. And I mean, when we have done these ingestions, the outcome is shocking. And only because you're removing certain things like the human element, and just in terms of organization and seeing it in a different way. And the fact that it goes through there and it's saying, you know, because there's everything we have an assumption. It's like, hey, you said you submitted this latent print. Of course, that was three detectives back where it was assigned, and it's been reassigned. This latent print was submitted. There was no results. So they find out that it's been sitting in the intake shelf at the lab, and it never went in. But because it was reassigned several times, nobody followed up. Just those little things. And I mean, nobody's making a mistake. It's just the nature of investigative tempo and what all of these investigators, detectives, agents are overwhelmed with, just in terms of volume.
But you need the case file, correct? Like you need.
Yeah, you have to ingest it. You have to gobble it up. And
hey, Kurt Dabb, you think you might be able to go nab the case file? And another question for you, Kurt Dabb. I mean, your friend Chris Nanos won't even let people search on foot in the desert, which seems pretty, you know, harmless to me. You think he would ever go for, you know, would you think he would ever entertain a conversation with Bernard Zaper, who's involved with this technology? I mean, what's there to lose using this?
Well, I know when I was at the Sheriff's Department for 20 years, the 7 in homicide, we had different programs. We had, you know, different people would come in, businesses would come in and, you know, try to sell the agency, you know, different investigative tools. And we went and purchased a few of them. And, you know, quite frankly, they were extremely helpful. This was before the age of AI. And it was basically, you know, a link system, like, you know, a chart, a flow chart. And the detective, you know, it was a detective's responsibility to keep track as far as the tasks that need to be done. And then he or she would delve those out to the other, you know, supporting homicide detectives. So I think it would be a great thing. You know, I just laugh because, you know, I retired before I had to wear a body camera, which was pretty cool to say, yeah. You know, and yeah. you go back to, you know, the beginnings of law enforcement, and it was literally gumshoeing it, walking around. And now we have AI to help solve a case. So yeah, I think it would be, I think it's a great tool. Any tool that law enforcement can use to help solve any case, you know, is great. And yeah, this is, yeah. You know,
Bernard, let me ask, I'm sorry, yeah. But I mean, is what you're doing, and I assume the answer is going to be yes, is this the future? Is it going to be much easier to solve crimes when agencies start allowing people to use cyber sleuth AI?
Yes. And I'll tell you that, I'm passionate about this. In fact, my contemporaries, the other subject matter experts, all of us have been the victims of violent crime in our career, particularly firearms violence. And we were on the dirty, wet end of victimization. And you can see when you really have somebody or a group out there that's really predating on people. But this, we're on the precipice of something that's so significant. I actually think it's going to be greater than fingerprints or DNA, just because it takes the human factor of fallibility and being overrun. It just organizes things in a way, and it's getting you going in the right direction. It would be amazing, particularly if you have the cases that are stalled out, whatever it is. You know, one of the things too we're finding, of course, is serial sexual assaults, because if the victim and the perpetrator don't know each other, those things are almost never a singular event. But it's very hard to connect them because they're underreported for one, and there's nothing tying it together. Usually you have a serial sexual case, it's because the different agencies, the detectives, they meet informally. Like they'll have a metro area wide sex offender coffee or whatever, and they start mentioning it, just like homicide detectives have traditionally done. And then things happen. This, and you know, really you can't just ingest one case. Like in this case, I think everything Pinell County has, ideally you want to get Tucson and whatever, but it just grabs all that stuff up and it's like it's going to town. And it takes the stress down on the officers, takes the stress down on the supervisors in particular. And then, you know, we're also letting them know that for the police leadership, the executive leadership, right, they're getting pressure from their city council or their county board of supervisors or the state. They're able to extract things that make CompStat look silly when it comes to, and I don't want to say that, that's probably not the right thing, but it just makes it, it's not political. You're showing the flow of exactly what's happening and what the outcomes are. And I mean, if you had to make a case for more officers or what was happening and all these type of things, but just the investigative profession is going to increase exponentially because we have this. And that's literally why it was made. It was made because we said, if we could have a dream here, what would it be? And it would be this super agent, super detective that's doing all these things simultaneously, is never has a blind spot. And, you know, imagine if you're working and you've been going for 15 hours straight and you're ass wasted, tired. You finally go home to see your family at 9 o'clock at night. And you're like, you're just burnt. And you roll back in the morning and you're drinking your coffee at 8:30 and you go and look at your dashboard of this eSleuth. And it's like, holy shit, it's giving you 5 alerts. It's giving you tasks and things. And then it's saying, and it's prompting, it's like, do you want a search warrant? And you say, yes, it's writing the affidavit for you for everything that's in the case. It's not generating anything that we testify, but it's like producing. You want a search warrant? You want an arrest warrant? You want to apply for a wiretap? I mean, everything's already in there. It's assembled it for you. And then we do it in a way that it would look like exactly like Pinell County, the way that they present it to the county attorney's office in their font. And then the investigator that has the dashboard, all of their basic attestation about their career and their training experience, that's already in there. So boom, it's populated. So, you know, if you were going to write 5 search warrants, which normally can be a pain in the ass, Arizona does it a little bit better way. It's a little bit more expedient. But I mean, just that type of utility alone is phenomenal.
Yeah. By the way, a few people have been asking, what does the shirt say? STS Nation True Crime Club established 2021, even though we weren't doing true crime. It is available, and I think right on the YouTube. But if not, you go to bonfire.com and plug in Surviving the Survivor. You'll see the shirt there. Phil Ramos, I mean, I got to defer to the godfather of true crime on this. Between digital forensics and DNA and all these other things and cell phones, and now you've got Bernard Zaper with eSleuth, which I was calling Cyber Sleuth, but it's eSleuth. How much harder is it going to become for criminals to commit crimes, in your opinion? That's for you, Phil, if you can hear me. I don't know if you – did Phil lose us? Phil, I think you lost us. I'm going to need you to go out, come back in, hopefully the COE. There's a weird bug with this system, which is why we're losing this system very soon. Let me just switch gears here a tiny bit. I mean, Kurt, has your theory about what happened that fateful day, February 1st, has your theory changed or evolved at all since that time period?
No, I'm still working on multiple theories.
What's your lead theory?
Well, that it was still multiple individuals between 2 and 4. I think maybe 3 and 4. I don't know if it was for kidnapping, if it was, you know, revenge, if it was, you know, myriad other things. But I still believe that it was multiple individuals involved.
If you can hear me, I'm having a lot of trouble with the connection.
Yeah. Phil, I hear you. Do you hear us, Phil? Phil's having a tour. I can tell his Wi-Fi is a little murky. COE will try to assist him. But, yeah, I mean, I remember you saying that, and I pulled it as, like, a little sound bite, you know, after the show because I thought it was interesting. I mean, Bernard, do you subscribe to that, a similar theory that it was – multiple people? Has your theory changed at all?
I am really trying to be agnostic about this because there are a lot of possibilities. But, you know, like I've said, I said on Fox a couple times, you have to have somebody in the case that literally concentrates on the most stupid possibility there is. Like opportunity, just dumb it down and work on a theory that is so simplistic it could be overlooked, because you know it's oftentimes we have a case and because it's dramatic or something on the exterior is there's a lot of assumption built in as to the sophistication of the people involved, and they end up just they're not sophisticated, they're stupid and lucky simultaneously. And so I always thought it would be good to have somebody that every once in a while would revisit like the simplest and dumbest possible reason. And so, you know, I mean, there's so many possibilities with this, I don't even want to speculate, other than the fact that I think it's foreboding that there's no proof of life or anything happening in terms of her survivability.
Yeah. Phil Ramos, you have us back? I think he still doesn't have us back. His wife. Phil, can you hear us? That's a negative, I would say. Bernard, someone asked a question in the chat, and I'm curious to get your perspective on this. Someone said, you know, if you had to start all over on this investigation outside of eSleuth, where do you start? If you're a human being and you're the lead detective, what do you do now if that person gets the mandate? Okay, start it all over.
So I wouldn't, first off, I'd say nothing derogatory about Pinell County or the FBI, but I think assuming from the get-go that it was not a welfare check, that it was a homicide. For example, it's treated as a homicide from the very beginning. And then there was, to me, a lot of investigative information that was made public. I'm very concerned about that. For example, that they have a helicopter flying around trying to pick up telemetry from the medical device. There's not a reason in the world that that should have been out there. The camera video from the doorbell thing, I could see the value of that because obviously somebody could say, hey, you know, my landscaper has that exact jacket. He's always got it hung in the back of his truck or something. So there's value with that. But it just seemed like there was stuff put out about the case that would only benefit an adversary. I don't know if that has had any impact on this whatsoever, but there's so much pressure because it was getting national attention to release information. But I would have liked to have seen both agencies stay quiet on that and just go to town.
And Bernard, I mean, just to that very point, I was going to ask you, and then we'll get back to Kurt. And I feel bad because Phil's having a tough time logging back in. I'm not 100% sure why, but you know, it's just obviously a difficult case under difficult circumstances. you're a former federal agent, and the FBI, it's still kind of unclear, I think, to everyone what part of this the FBI has and what part Pima County has. But if the FBI knows anything, they're going to be like you. They're just not talking, right? I mean, the policy is you just don't say a word. So in that regard, from a federal standpoint, we wouldn't know if they're making arrests tonight. We wouldn't have any clue if it was happening.
Well, yes and no. And I would say that agency in particular lets out a lot of information for other purposes, which I'm not in agreement of and never have been. And, you know, you have to be careful. You had to be careful working sometimes with them, because all of a sudden information would get out for whatever reason, like they wanted to show progress or whatever. And but I think, you know, the best approach, I always liked my legacy agency, because we literally had a congressional mandate to support state and local law enforcement, period. They were the customer. So everything we did was for them, if we're working with them on something that's whatever. And so you would always want to have the chief law enforcement officer for that local agency be in charge. And, you know, you're supporting it. It just works better that way. And you take out all the guesswork. Sometimes, you know, you might have a situation where they are asking, hey, can you guys take the lead on this? Because they're overrun. Well, even in that case, you're still doing it hand in hand, and they know everything you know, just better that way, unless there is some demonstration of compromise, which is rare that stuff happens. But, you know, I mean, it should never be, and I'm sure they don't have any guesses internally in this case who's running, who's doing what. So I would guess now that, and this little derogatory, I would say FBI is probably keeping their distance from it if they're not having progress, and leaving it to the sheriff's department to hang out there without the progress would be
Kurt. Kurt, what's your thought? By the way, there is actual news today, and we're 30 minutes in, haven't gotten into it because we got the best guests in true crime who are telling us about some really cool things. And why wouldn't I not talk about that? But we're about to get to the news here. Kurt, I mean, do you agree with that the FBI might be keeping a little bit of a distance from again, use Bernard's words, be derogatory at all or inflammatory towards your old colleagues, but maybe because of Sheriff Chris Nanos, that they're kind of like giving the old Heisman a little bit, keeping him at an arm's length?
I mean, yeah, it's possible. I would like to think, and look, I've seen it firsthand on the ground where, you know, we're investigating a shooting of a federal involving a federal agent, and another federal agency comes in and they say they're going to take it. And the sheriff says, no, we're going to take it. And, you know, it's a pissing contest back and forth. Sometimes it's an hour before you figure out who's going to do the investigation. Mm-hmm. I just hope that's not the case, you know, with this. If this task force, and from what I understand, it's still active, you know, they're constantly running down leads, going through all the evidence that they have. So I think that it's just that small group of individuals, whether it's 2, 4, 5, 6, whatever. And their sole focus is just to work on that and let the talking heads deal with all the ancillary stuff. So the regular detectives and special agents, we don't have issues with each other. It's just the bureaucracies.
Right. Yeah, 100%. Well said. Arizona Mermaid, please email me. I'd love to chat with you. SurvivingTheSurvivor@gmail.com. Nanos cannot keep folks from searching on public land. We have folks searching. We'd love to talk to you again. SurvivingTheSurvivor@gmail.com. So, Kurt Dabb, I read this. For full disclosure, I texted it to you and Bob because I almost fell off my chair when I read this. But the latest bit of news is body cam footage, which I have. I'm going to play in a second. Shows police at Tucson International Airport, otherwise known as TIA, reading Sheriff Chris Nanos a Miranda warning after he brought an undeclared loaded gun to a TSA checkpoint on his way to vacation in Laguna Beach, California. He was not charged. This is the sheriff. But he missed his flight and had to stow the weapon in his car. County residents complained to the Board of Supervisors. This Board of Supervisors thing has been going on for a while. But they had complained previously that they believe he was treated more leniently than the average citizen would have been. Without further ado, let's watch. This is body cam.
By the way,
what's that?
It happens all the time. It's cops and doctors. You just forget they have it.
Yeah, that's interesting, doctors. But here we go. This is the body cam footage.
Or I have to read you your rights because of the whole. Okay. Right. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. You have the right to the presence of an attorney to assist you prior to questioning and to be with you during questioning if you so desire. If you cannot afford an attorney, you have the right to have an attorney appointed for you prior to questioning. Do you understand your rights, sir?
I do.
Okay. Now, having been advised of these rights and understanding these rights, will you answer my questions?
Sure.
Okay, perfect. Formality.
Make sure my picture is good.
Okay. You're the only one that handled the bag today, to your knowledge?
Well, my wife may have. Yes, I'm.
Okay. And that is your firearm?
Yes, it is.
Okay, perfect.
It's a department issue.
Department issued. Okay. Where are you traveling today?
We're going to Laguna Beach through LA. LAX, I think is the place to go.
Do you remember packing the firearm?
No, I did. So last night we had a election night, so we went to the Star Pass Resort, stayed there. I had the gun in my car. I didn't want to leave it in the valet, so I stuck it in that bag, the backpack. Took everything to the room. Got up this morning in a rush, when we were late, and just threw everything in.
Okay. Okay. Have you guys? What all have you gone over with him? Or
I handed him his notice.
Okay.
And then I let him know that you were coming up.
Okay.
And then as soon as you get done, I'll advise him what the steps.
Okay.
You are done, sir.
Let me contact my chain.
You do your chain, and then I'll tell him what the next step after you do yours.
Perfect.
I got this info.
And your phone number is this 465?
Yes. Okay.
Kurt Dabb, your reaction, I mean, there's things called optics. This guy is not the most popular guy in the world. Your reaction to this?
Like Bernard said, this type of thing happens all the time. It doesn't appear that there is any criminal intent, which is something that would need to be proven in court. It would be the same thing with a private citizen. You know, obviously they're going to run a background check, make sure they're not prohibited possessor, but you know, he's the sheriff. He's not prohibited. It was a simple mistake.
What about looking like crap being the center of this investigation? That's not going well.
Yeah. Well, you know, that happened in 2024 and stuff has the ability to rear its ugly head from the past. I think we all know that. So as much as I, you know, I'm not happy with the sheriff, I don't think that, you know, this is that big of a deal. Now, if he would have been acting like an asshole or something like that to the cop that was doing it, then we've got an issue.
Yeah, that's a guess.
And again, and this is, you know, not something that law enforcement or, you know, street cops base their decisions to arrest or not arrest, is the prosecutors, right? You know, you can't take that into account, even though you know the prosecutors aren't going to prosecute the sheriff or a deputy or the chief of police or a street cop from making, you know, a simple mistake. So, it happens.
Yeah. I'm going to throw this to you because this is a super chat. Kurt, we talked about it a little bit, but I think I threw the question to Bernard. So this one to you. If you took over this case and you were once a homicide detective, what's the first thing you would do as a new lead detective on this case?
You know, it's much like how we approach.
Go ahead, Bernard.
Okay. You hear me okay?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'd thrown it to Kurt, but go ahead. I'd like to hear your answer.
No way. Sorry about that. I was wrapped up in the fact of this airport civil violation that may result in fines, but it's not a criminal pinch. In Arizona and in other states, like if you're in a city that has a prohibition on handguns, for example, then they have that jeopardy. But here in Arizona, it's a civil issue with the TSA.
And Bernard, I mean, this is fairly common. I mean, it just happens to look really bad, I think, that you've got the head of the department. I mean, but I'm sure you or even maybe your friends have accidentally gone through TSA without announcing that you've got a firearm. It is common, correct?
If you're a law enforcement officer, you're armed all the time, whether you're on or off duty purportedly, because if you have, you have your police license, it's what you do. And, you know, it's just one of those things. And I think it should not be perceived as a big deal. I don't see him doing anything other than it's unnatural for him not to have his firearm with him, even though he has to go through the extra check, the fact that he's using this common carrier and he can't carry it. It's like the one restrictive thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a funny story. When I was at CrimeCon in Orlando with Scott Duffy, who's a retired FBI, he had not flown as a retired agent since after 9/11. It was the first time he'd flown, and he just said it was so weird. He had to wait.
It's so weird. I remember the first time they asked me to take my shoes off, and I said, "You got to take your shoes off." And if an adult is saying that, people get really nervous. Like, you don't know.
Scott Duffy had no idea. I'm like, welcome to 20 whatever year it was, 2024.
Yeah.
Kurt Dabb, back to you on this. You take over the case. You are retired homicide in Pima County, but let's say you're active. You're called back in. What are the first couple of things you do?
Well, if it was right now or 10 or 20 years from now, if it's 10 or 20 years from now, I'm going to be running DNA again. The Sheriff's Department just solved the cold case homicide from 1974. They just made an arrest this week, and it was all because of DNA. So that's what I would do in the future. If it was right now, I'd be knocking on Bernard's door. If I was the sheriff, being like, hey, I want this AI, and I want it to eat up my case and give me a plan on what to do. And while that's working out, I'm going to sit down and I'm just going to read every single word of the case. I'm going to watch every single second of the video. And yeah, you just got to start from ground zero, like it's a brand new investigation.
I mean, Bernard, how are you? I mean, have you made a plea to Sheriff Chris Nanos? I mean, have you called the office and said, hey, I'm a retired ATF special agent in charge. We've got this technology. Have you tried that?
We haven't, but there's an agency very close by that's one of the first ingesters in Arizona, and then another major agency. We have NDA, so we can't put that out quite yet. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that in the front end of it, it's, we have to go through CJIS compliance, which is critically important. Right. And so not only does that require some mechanics and some doing, and then they have to fund it. We have found that this can be also purchased with the opioid settlement money, because there's stuff at eSleuth that helps in the requirements of the opioid settlement, which is somewhat similar to the tobacco settlement. So we're trying to provide that funding stream for them, at least the information. But we have reached out to all law enforcement agencies in Arizona. I have not personally reached out to the Sheriff's Department about this, but you know, it would be something, I think. And it would be necessary to ingest their entire record management system to be effective.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you can have a conversation with Kurt Dabb, who knows a person or two, and see what happens. Yeah. But this woman here, her name is Coral Michelle Smith, and I do like the name Coral, but I don't like what she's done in the past. Kurt Dabb, she's now wanted in connection with a separate kidnapping and aggravated assault investigation from fairly recent, from May 29th, just a few days ago. They describe her, your department, your former department, as dangerous with an extensive criminal history, and the alleged crime scene, which you don't have a lot of details on, but the alleged crime scene 6.8 miles from Nancy Guthrie's home. She has previously been accused of kidnapping, assault, robbery, and disorderly conduct in Pima County, and served four different stints in prison. She was found guilty of robbery in 2011, guilty of disorderly conduct and attempted vehicle theft in 2014, guilty of robbery in 2019, guilty of criminal trespass in 2021, found guilty of attempted vehicle theft in 2022. I mean, the list goes on. If you didn't know, she almost looks like she'd be a sweet woman, you know, nice person, but apparently not. Again, I mean, how odd is this? Let's see if Phil, you back with us? We were all bumming out that you weren't there. Go ahead, Kurt.
I've known Coral since she was like 13.
Really?
I've arrested her a number of times.
Wow.
And yes, she
I told you Tucson's a small town.
She's got some issues. She was involved with the methamphetamine game from a very early age, unfortunately. She lived in an area of Pima County that is notorious for meth crime, murders. The area that she lived in at one point in the early 2000s is a 1 square mile area, and we had like 5 homicides within a year. That's how violent it was down there. So it's unfortunate. You know, I look at her now and I can still see her at the age of 13 when I arrested her for the first time. It's sad. It's disheartening.
Wow. Not only do we have the best guests, but we got best guests that are arresting the suspects on our show. Go ahead.
But yeah, for her to have involvement with the Guthrie case, I bet my retirement check that that is not the case. She's involved in a drug game. She has been known to associate with, you know, various racial type gangs. So it doesn't surprise me that she's still living a life of crime, but it saddens me.
Yeah, it saddens me too. I mean, Phil Ramos, so this woman, Coral, is being sought by Pima County Sheriff's for a kidnapping charge that's 6.8 miles from Nancy Guthrie's home. I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill, and you just heard Kurt say that he would bet his retirement check that it's not her. Also, she has very, very light, almost looks like she doesn't have eyebrows. They're so light blonde, and obviously we know from the Boogeyman Nest camera video that person had some eyebrows. But Phil Ramos, when we lost you, and I sent you this too, one of the most recent piece of news, you got Sheriff Chris Nanos, who tried to fly with a weapon and missed his flight because he was stopped by and read his Miranda rights by Pima County. And now you've got a bolo for a kidnapper. I mean, you almost think it's an episode of Breaking Bad. You can't make this stuff up. But how strange is it, or concerning, I guess? I mean, Kurt doesn't seem too worried about it, but you've got this woman police are looking for in connection with a kidnapping. They're saying they don't think it has a connection, but what do you have to do in this case besides find her?
I agree with Kurt. I think there is a 0% chance that this lady's involved. I mean, she just doesn't fit the profile of what we know about the case. I mean, she's, you know, she may be a career criminal and you know, overall bad person, but I don't see any connection to Nancy at all on this. None. Yeah.
And Phil, one of the questions I was trying to ask you when you had trouble with the Wi-Fi is, and damn you, Wi-Fi, you're not our friend ever. You know, Bernard is at the forefront. You know, he's part of a company that's created this AI for specifically to solve crimes. Is that, I mean, in your opinion, is that going to be the future? Like between DNA and cell phones and digital forensics and now a system where you can literally put in, you know, Bernard saying you can put in the entire file and it will give you all these valuable items, eSleuth, it's called. Is this going to be the future of policing in, you know, 2027, 2028?
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on, you know, how many agencies sign on to it. It's, I was able to hear a lot of Bernard's details on it, and it's amazing, man. It's going to save the investigators a ton of paperwork and time. Every time you do a search warrant and do the application for the search warrant, that's an hour or two out of your time. Then you got to make sure that it's done right. And I mean, it sounds RoboCop is next.
Yeah. Bernard, I'm curious. I mean, I'm just I'm not intellectual, but I'm intellectually interested. I mean, when did you come up with the idea? How did you guys come up with the idea? How long has this been in the works?
I was not a creator. The creator was Bob Batty is the CEO. He's a Silicon Valley industry leader that's been in the law enforcement space for 20 plus years. I mean, he's brought like the Leap Network and a number of other successful law enforcement systems. And then it was him and another subject matter expert, Scott Thomason, who was an unbelievable case maker in his time. And they were the early pioneers of it. It has since grown. It's, I mean, we have
on our board of advisors, we have the former director of Secret Service, former director of ATF. We have Joe Kennedy, who's written a number of items and issues on solving cold case homicide. He's sort of a leader in that area in terms of consulting and helping out. And so, and then, you know, Eric Harden, another subject matter expert who was a pioneer in a lot of investigative techniques. And so we have this unique partnership marriage, if you will, between Silicon Valley and experienced law enforcement, and ideally being built for us. It wasn't like an idea that was created by, say, some kind of developers. They thought we could apply this to law enforcement. As law enforcement say, this is what we'd want. This would be the ideal thing for the people that are working cases and dedicating their whole life, not seeing their family because they can't let off the gas, or people are going to get hurt, or kids are never going to come home, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the founding and formation of it. And like I said, it's gaining serious momentum. It's gotten the major attention of investors and whatnot. And so we just, wow. You know, this is our last hurrah in terms of the law enforcement side of it, is that we want this thing to germinate and be, you know, our last big contribution to everything. It's just a great way to finish up the effective career, you know, before we all get to the place where we're saying things two times in a row. And then we're
like the soup is dripping out of your mouth. You're not there,
Bernard. You show up for a sales briefing and you get your underwear on the outside of your pants. It's an indication of
time. Saber, you look like you could still hold your own in a bar fight. I'm not believing any of that.
I have a bad hinge.
Yeah, I've got look at this. I showed this shirt before, but you see it says 2021. Now there's a company called Anthropic. They're about to IPO. I know next to nothing about business. They've been around the same time as my podcast, and they have a valuation of $965 billion with about zero revenue. So you never know. The next time we have Bernard on, he might be coming to us from his mega yacht. I think Bezos is selling his yacht, Bernard, if you're interested. And
if we had that kind of evaluation, I'd be giving it away to law enforcement.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. Listen, I entertain the trolls because maybe I have a thin skin, but maybe I also enjoy the fun. Now, I really don't think this person is a troll, but I am curious. I'm going to bring this up. It is disgusting that the host brought this up, to be honest. Now, I don't know if she's talking about me calling this a global phenomenon, but I think it has to do with me bringing up Coral, the person who's won for kidnapping. Serious question, Super Goat Gazer. This is the highest profile kidnapping in the entire country. Within a 7-mile radius of this woman's home, Nancy Guthrie, someone is currently wanted for kidnapping. You don't think it's fair to ask about that? And look, I just got an answer from one of our guests who actually knows her, and they said there's no way it's her, and I moved on. Because, you know what? I believe in them that there's no way it's her. But how do you ignore a woman who is wanted for kidnapping, who has a history of kidnapping that's less than 7 miles, and we're talking a city of like 250 square miles? How do you ignore that? Email me, survivingthesurvivor@gmail.com. I would like to hear why I am disgusting. People are so quick to criticize, man. It's unbelievable. But I would like to know, honestly, I would honestly like to know why I'm disgusting for asking that question. Now,
no, it's that old saying, man, haters going to hate.
They're definitely going to hate. Well, I'll tell you who else Pima County doesn't love. That is YouTubers. Kurt, I'll go back to you on this. The neighborhood, Nancy Guthrie's neighborhood, which is the Catalina Foothills, a certain area of it, has become a destination for YouTubers, live streamers, drones, citizen sleuths, and true crime tourists. And now they have, I think it was today, they arrested a few people. It was yesterday. Damian Todd Enderle was ticketed and released. Alex Zabel, also known as for part of the criminal network, and Troy Bradshaw streams as Da Juice. They were arrested. Here's one of the arrest forms here. This is for 34-year-old Troy Bradshaw Lewis. And this one here is for Alexander Zabel, who I'm sure are both decent guys. They had a bond out. But what's going on in Pima County? Like, I understand it's a nuisance, and that's what they were arrested for. They're in a public area. Are we treading on some thin ice here when you start quashing the First Amendment?
Well, Lieutenant Bob Krieger was the Sheriff's Department con law expert. I've done some research, and based on the statutes and the reasoning that was provided, I don't think that there's any infringement on freedom of speech or freedom of the press. However, that's not for us to decide. That's for a court if it, you know, goes there. What I don't like is the possible selective enforcement of dealing with these two individuals when there was a local news crew from, I think, KVOA.
Yeah.
May have gotten, you know, the scuttlebutt beforehand and was either working in concert with law enforcement and were there to film all this stuff or not. So if you're going to enforce the law for one, you know, group of individuals, you've got to enforce it with everybody. I looked at some of the videos that was going on, you know, that was being passed around. One of the guys, I guess, either put up a tent and peed in it and then allegedly dumped it out. I saw the video. I couldn't tell whether or not. And I think that was one of the things that, you know, people were calling in about is, you know, the nuisance. And if you read the two statutes that they were, you know, purportedly cited under, I don't see any legal grounds to where, you know, they violated constitutional law. I think the optics are bad, but like with use of force, optics are bad. When body cameras came out and they started seeing cops punching people and kicking people and hitting people with batons and tasers and shooting, you know, dumping a whole mag during a shooting, it's justified, but the optics are bad. So I think that's the deal in this case. But me, being the cop, the type of cop that I was, it was not above me or below me to throw a commander, a lieutenant, be it a lieutenant, a captain, a chief, or the sheriff in my case report for a homicide if they showed up at the scene. And if they were instructed to cite these individuals, sure, the deputies could cite them, but I would be honest in my report because you're going to have to answer. The sheriff's not going to go, you know, on the stand. The captain's not going to go on the stand and testify to say that, yeah, I'm the one that, you know, issued those orders until it's documented in a case report. So I'm hoping that the deputies, you know, annotated that in their case report so that the individuals that made those decisions, you know, can be dealt with. And yeah. Again, I don't think that there was anything illegal about it. It's just the optics are bad.
Yeah, I kind of tend to agree with you, and people jump down my throat because I'm a reporter. But listen, we can be a pain in the ass sometimes. And this is a good comment here. And someone said Juice works at a home for the elderly and is a great person. And look, I don't know these guys from Adam. I don't. And I'm sure that they're very well-intentioned. But Caroline Taterville here, showing up to broadcast a piece is one thing. Sitting there all day, every day is another thing. I guess, Phil Ramos, and just a couple other quick things, and then we'll get some final thoughts. But, Phil, you know, the media can be a great ally for you in Vegas. You're looking for a murder suspect. You get it out to the news. It's in every hotel room. But we can also be a giant pain in the ass. And where do you draw the line there? Do you think it was fair to arrest these YouTubers, or should they have been given another warning, or should they just be allowed to sit where they are? Apparently, this is a public area. Kurt, can you explain that? Because I thought that was sort of private property, but I guess if they're in the street, is it public?
Well, yeah, it's a public thoroughfare. But again, you know, we've all seen, I live in the neighborhood. It's a quiet neighborhood. The roads don't have any dividing lines. You know, they're two-way roads. There's a lot of one-way roads in that area. But, you know, just imagine living in your home. And this is why, you know, the nuisance thing came in. You know, living at your home and driving, trying to get to your house, and you're having to navigate, you know, all these people that are, you know, milling about, trying to do good things. But the quality of life for the people that live in a neighborhood. They've complained. The individuals allegedly were warned one or more times. And, you know, I don't know. How often do you keep warning somebody before, you know, the people that live in that neighborhood are getting pissed and they're going to go to the Board of Supervisors? And, you know, and I'm sure Nanos is thinking, well, that's the last thing I need is the Board of Supervisors on my ass for something else. So, you know, yeah. He and his people probably, you know, ordered them to effect the arrests.
Yeah. I mean, Ramos, you are the godfather of true crime. Where do you stand on this? Should they have been allowed to sit and continue to sit and stare at Nancy Guthrie's home, which doesn't sound all that fun, you know, however months later, but.
I think it's all going to depend on the details of the citations and what the officers wrote them up for, whatever the specific violation is, how it is criminal in nature, and who's doing the complaining. Here you've got a neighborhood where it's been swarmed ever since this happened, and I'm sure that a lot of the neighbors are just getting tired of it. And no doubt in my mind that a lot of the neighbors were calling and complaining and saying, hey, please do something about these people. Now, it's not like they were professional reporters like we've had out there, right? These are not professional reporters. So they're going to take advantage and, you know, they can be very irritating. We're trained to restrain and not react to them yelling at us and spitting at us and fingers in our face and stuff like that. But the general citizenry is not. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, but I'm sure that that neighborhood's had its fill of the looky-loos.
Yeah. One final thing, and then we'll get some final thoughts here. Savannah Guthrie has periodically come out. I know Mother's Day, maybe it was the last time. It's hard to even keep track at this point. Maybe there was one other after that, but she came out, I believe it was yesterday. I'm losing track of time now. And she had made another emotional plea, and then she was on the Today Show talking about it. Let's just watch this. By the way, since we're going to go to New York City right now, in the second quarter last night, I did buy online a Knicks championship shirt. And now when they lose in six or seven, please blame me for the giant collapse. But hopefully that doesn't happen. But and I'm not narcissistic, but I do think it was that purchase that could doom the Knicks for good here. But here we go. This is now Savannah on the Today Show.
Back here and leading the ship, which I know has not been easy. And yet here you are morning after morning, getting out of bed, spending the mornings with us. And I know so many of you at home feel the same way about you.
Well, I mean, first of all, I can't really even look at you every day without crying. You are my best friend. And, you know, it's really hard to come back. And I've been trying so hard to hold it together. And I promise I will. This show and this hour especially is like about joy, but having you and all my I mean, everyone at the people behind the scenes, people in my ear, the producers, our castmates, it's like, you know, when I see you in the morning, I know that you see me no matter what is going on. And sometimes it's almost too much, because yeah. I feel like to do the job, I gotta like keep it together, pull it together, you know. But I'm happy to be back, and it's like the 2 hours of my day that it's not that I'm not thinking about it, because I am.
Yeah.
But it's something to do. Yes. And it brings me a lot of joy to be with everybody.
Yeah.
But no, it's not easy.
No, I know it's not easy. And it also speaks, I think, to the fact that, I mean, I remember even when I started here, and I'm sure you've heard him, my dad sort of made fun of the way we call each other family. He's like, how's the family? But we really do work in a place where people surround you with love, like you're loved, you know? And so there must be some like tiny bit of, and relief isn't even the word. I don't even know what it is, but like a spark of something.
It is. It's a little respite. And you are my family. I mean, I don't think if I had any other kind of job, I would have even tried to come back.
Yeah.
You know, but I was like, well, I didn't, you know, I just felt like, well, what else should I do? And my mom would have said the same, like, honey, you know, just keep going. And so I am, you know, and it's hard when you're with your best friend to not be real. And so I was a little afraid in a way to do this show with you. You've asked me before, like, which are so sweet, you know, come on, you want to fill in? And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready, because I couldn't look at you in this kind of setting where we just talk about life and not tell the truth about my life. And so, you know, I think, you know, I know maybe people wonder, like, whoa, what's going on? How is she able to do that job? Is she not thinking about it? Did she forget? No, never, never.
And neither have we. Like, we'll have your back. We'll be with you forever with this and never forget.
And we still need everybody's prayers. Yeah, and we still need, wish someone would call and say what they know.
And I think
So something tells me that Bernard Zapier's favorite show is probably not Jenna and Chanel, but he can appreciate a good morning segment every once in a while. Bernard Zapier is a retired ATF special agent in charge. Wish I was a special agent in charge of something, anything. But Bernard,
you really
I don't know. Especially now you're going to hit it big in AI, and I'll live off your coattails. Just your reaction to seeing that. I mean, it is we talked about this very early on in the show today. The not knowing is absolute torture. I mean, that part of it is absolute torture. Just your thoughts here and your final thoughts. I mean, is this case going to eventually be solved? And here's Johnny Knoxville's take on what we were just talking about. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, of course it'll be solved someday. Who knows what that outcome is, but you know, when I see the torture that the family's going through, but it makes me think of all the missing children in the United States, which has got to be the most heinous and god-awful thing that anybody could ever go through. And they have to go through a lifetime of knowing that their child now would be 7 years old and now 8 years old. And I've always felt like we have to put every investigative resource on protecting children. And there is an active thing to hunt children for the worst purposes ever in this country, and it's still going on. I commend the U.S. Marshal Service in particular. They've put a lot of emphasis on the recovery. Same with ICE. They don't get credit for that, but they have recovered a lot of children, including U.S. citizen children, from this. The only thing I was going to say about this is the fact that, you know, the family put out a pretty massive reward. And I always get concerned when those massive dollar amounts come out, that you're pulling out every weirdo in the planet that's looking for a buck, and they've had enough CFI training on the television that they're convinced that they're gonna come out to Tucson and somehow crack this case. And you know, unfortunately for the people that live there and live in this neighborhood, they've had their serenity, their privacy, and all this stuff trampled. And you know, you don't get to go walking through somebody's property because you have a hunch or whatever. So, I mean, it just, the people there get victimized from it as well. It's the same thing with the JonBenet Ramsey case where I went to school in Boulder. I mean, that neighborhood, they had to block the streets and check IDs to allow people to roll down the street because it became this really grotesque memorial of curiosity. People from all over the world were coming there. It still goes on to this day. They've done everything they can to kind of conceal which house it was. Yeah. So I feel bad for all involved.
That's an interesting take. Much appreciated. That is, again, Bernard Zapier, the future Mark Zuckerberg of police investigations. Kurt Dabb, retired Pima County homicide detective. I love that sign. I didn't read it till now. I don't know why. So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God, Romans 10:17. Love that. Kurt, your reaction to Savannah, the not knowing, and what I ask you every time, are we going to get an answer in this case? And is it going to be in our lifetimes, Kurt Dabb?
Well, I'll start with the latter. Yeah, I think it's going to be in our lifetime. I think the dogged police work between the Sheriff's Department, the FBI, and whatever other resources they have is going to bring this case to a resolution. It's probably not going to be as fast as the family would like, and all of us. But I truly believe that you can't outrun the long arm of the law. As far as Savannah, I mean, it just breaks my heart. I mean, I can't even I can't even imagine. I lost my father 3 years ago. It was the most difficult, you know, thing I've, one of the most difficult things I've ever had to deal with. And Savannah hasn't lost her mother. You know, she's missing, but there's also a possibility that she's not around. And I think all of us don't believe, you know, that she's still alive. And that not knowing, man, it's, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine. But like her, I would go back to work, right? You have to. One of my best friends passed away a week and a half ago. His wife just went to work 2 days ago. We have to get on with our lives, but it just breaks my heart.
Sorry to hear about your dad. Sorry to hear about your good friend. A lot of tragedy in this world, and you really, truly never know when that clock is up. Phil Ramos, retired homicide detective, 30-plus years, 15 in homicide. The guy's done it all, three-time Vegas Officer of the Year, one cool cat. Phil, you get the final word here. Please tell us that this will get solved, and your final thoughts.
Yeah, it's going to get solved. You know, it's... It's a matter of these guys aren't going to give up until they solve it. Even if it gets to the point of cold case status, they're still going to be plugging away at it. They're not going to, hey, screw cold case. You call it whatever you want. I'm still working it. The downside is they're not going to be able to have the same amount of time as they're doing because you got other cases to do. You know, you got a murder that you're working. You're going to have another murder later, and you're just going to be, the cases are going to be piling up. So the amount of time may not be as much as they want it to be, but you can't ignore the other crime that you have to investigate. And, you know, I gotta agree with Kurt and Bernard that the chances of her still being alive are so slim. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this from the very beginning. It's really heartbreaking, and kudos to Savannah for the way she's holding this. Surviving trauma like this, everybody does it in their own way. Everybody thinks that, okay, well, just deal with it, move on. You never move on. You deal with it in a certain way, but you never move on. There's always going to be a hole, regardless of how this ends up. Whether there's a final resolution, whether there's criminal prosecution or something, there's always going to be trauma and grief. And how do you get through this? And the only way to do that is just keep pushing forward. And they will, but they'll never be whole again.
That's why we call him the coolest cat, Judy Herbert. I think that would make a cool shirt. But I put a dog as the image instead of a cat just to confuse everyone. Amazing to have Bernard Zaper back. Best of luck with East Sleuth. Kurt Dabb, retired homicide out of Pima County. The Godfather, Phil Ramos out of Las Vegas. Love you, Vegas. Love you, Tucson. Love you, Arizona. And let's imagine if she was still alive. It would be the greatest comeback story of all time. Let's all pray that she is still around. And another show coming your way tomorrow. Guess stick around one quick second. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Be nice. Be kind. Don't murder anyone.